Leah, guess what?
What?
I have a surprise for you.
Okay.
It's pretty big. It could be life-changing, actually. Are you ready?
Cool,
are you sitting?
Yeah, I'm sitting right in front of you.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm so stupid.
Yeah.
I just got back the results, and we are having a child. The psychic predicts that we're going to have it in like a year and a half. So congratulations.
Oh, I thought you were talking about other news.
What other news did you think I was giving you?
I thought you took that intelligence test to see like if there was something wrong with you. Remember? We signed you up for that.
You actually want me to get tested if I have a normal IQ?
When did you go? Was that it Monday at like 4 p.m.?
Yeah.
To the psychic?
Yeah. On Claritas.
Okay. Yeah. No, you went to the intelligence test that we signed you up for.
So what is
that? That wasn't a psychic. I was just trying to figure out like if there was
something. If I'm stupid? Is that what you're trying to say? You're trying to figure out if I'm stupid?
Yeah.
Well, what did you see the results? Am I dumb? Am I a big dumbo?
Well, when you walked into the office, what kind of questions did they ask?
Some things about my life, but then also just like.
How did she give you the news?
She was like, if there's 6 donuts in there and I eat 4, how many donuts are left?
Yeah, it sounds like basic math.
So.
What did you say?
Hmm?
What did you say to answer that one, for example?
Oh, I passed.
Yeah, no, we're actually not going to have a kid.
Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bad Science. I'm your host, Ethan Edinburgh. This is the show where we break down the science of a movie with a comedian and a scientist. And today is the comedic powerhouse film from 2007, Knocked Up. And I have two wonderful guests to try and help me get through everything pregnancy related. First of all, she is an actress, improviser, and writer, Noelle Lara.
Hi. Do I say hi?
You can say hi, sure. You can say bye and just log off too. That's cool.
Hi, everyone.
Other options would be hello or hey or
yeah.
What's up. Whatever you want.
Well, this was made in 2007, so we'll go with a what's up.
Perfect. Thanks for being on the show. I'm super excited to talk to you. First time?
Yeah, it's my first time on the show. And I'm just so excited about this movie because people who know my comedy know I love kids. But another fun fact is I also love babies. So
ooh, yeah.
all of the above. I'm really excited.
I'm definitely the type of person that will, I think it's a little bit weird, unfortunately, but like if I'm shopping at a mall and I see a baby nearby, I'll kind of just smile and like stare probably a little bit too long.
Oh, yeah.
Because it just makes me, is that weird?
Yeah.
Am I being weird?
Well,
do that? Does that
right.
Parent?
I feel like I'm so lucky being a woman that loves babies because like, you know, during this pandemic, people don't bring their kids out in public. And that's been like a huge thing where I just don't see anyone under the age of 25 anymore. You know, just don't bring babies to grocery stores. And I saw one in a grocery store and I like ran up to the woman and was just like, like I basically asked to smell her baby without taking off my mask.
And was she accommodating?
She was just like, oh yeah, I have a baby. And I was like, oh my gosh.
You were the subject of her like, guess what happened to me today story at the end of the day.
She went home and she was like, a real weird thing happened. But yeah, I understand that feeling when you just see a baby and you're like, I want to get close to it.
Okay, well, we have another guest who might think that I'm more of a weirdo. I guess I'll ask her the same question. She's a board-certified gynecologist. It's Dr. Stacy Tanaway.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me on.
How's it going, Dr. Stace?
Yeah, I'm hanging out in Florida, you know, so chilling in the mm-hmm. with the pandemic with the Floridians.
Yeah, I feel slightly bad for you. I'm from Florida.
Yeah.
And it's rough right
yeah.
now over there.
Yes, it is. I've got nothing else to say on that.
I have so much to say on that, but we don't have time.
Right. Different subject, different time.
Different subject. We're talking about Knocked Up. This movie, I got to say, I haven't seen it now for a few years. And I mean, I remember liking it at the time, of course. But now upon rewatching it, I was simply blown away with like, how perfect it is. I feel like it's just simultaneously like heartwarming and hilarious and just universally relatable. So anyways, I want to hear what you guys think. First, Dr. Stacy, this movie must have been very important to you, or at least stuck out as like, I got to run to see it, right?
Yeah, I think I first saw it when I was actually in OBGYN residency, which is probably was the peak time for me to see this movie. Mm-hmm. And I think I watched it probably with my co-residents about a million times.
Wow.
It and like you said, it really is perfect. Perfection. And of all like TV movie depiction of pregnancy and childbirth, this is probably the most spot on.
Wow. Okay. That's good to know, because I have so many questions about stuff that was said in the movie that I'm not sure if it's fact or fiction. But that's good to know that it seems like for the most part, if you're trying to learn about pregnancy in a fun way, then just throw this film on.
Exactly. I mean, I could talk about this film forever. There's so much good stuff in it.
Well, we're going to shove that forever into about an hour. Noelle, what about you? When did you see it? What did you think of it?
You know, I don't remember when I first saw it, but it must have been when it came out. I love it. I also think it's nearly a perfect movie. I love the tone of it. I love anything that's heartwarming and comedic. I think that's the perfect balance. I have a few scenes I'd cut just in terms of the fact that it's a 2-hour comedy. But for the most part, it's just like, it's so sweet. And there's so many cute, loving moments while still being very, very funny.
Yeah, I think there's this like ping pong that happens throughout the movie. I was noticing between kind of the two crews, you know, Seth Rogen has his crew, you know, Jason Segel and Jonah Hill and Jay Baruchel and Martin Starr. And they're all just like incredibly hilarious. It's an insane pinball machine of comedy. And then on the other side, you have Leslie Mann and Paul Rudd and the kids, Judd Apatow's two actual daughters, and they're all hilarious. So it's like, and of course, obviously, the two stars of the film are fantastic. But anyways, I was just blown away. I just couldn't believe how insanely good this movie is. And it makes sense that it made, you know, 10 times its budget. It made like $300 million, which is like insane for a comedy. But I get it. After rewatching it, it's like, yeah, this is the comedy that should make that much money.
Yeah, it weirdly holds up, too. There's a few like moments of things where I'm like, well, that might not be, could have been made today. But like for the most part, it's still wildly entertaining. And like a lot of the jokes and comedy hold up 13 years later.
Yeah, I really think it captures the fear and the emotions and like all the humor that goes into pregnancy and childbirth just so perfectly. So even if there's maybe some factual incorrect, you know, myths and misperceptions here and there, the actual emotion and fear behind it is just, it's right on.
Awesome. Okay, well then that's a great segue. Let's just jump into, there's so many quotes that are like both hilarious and I think bring up good points or good talking points. So the first one I wrote down here is they're in a club and Leslie Mann's character has a phone call where she says that Sadie might have chicken pox. And I know this isn't your area of special, you know, area of expertise. However, Jason Segel's character said something so funny. He says, I've had chicken pox 3 times, no immunity to it. And Seth Rogen tells him, we don't have the heart to tell him it's herpes. And he responds, it's not herpes if it's everywhere. So many of these just great quick lines from them, by the way. But anyways, what does that make sense? Is it not herpes if it's everywhere? And also, do people get chickenpox a bunch of times?
People, for the most part, people only get chickenpox once, but it is possible. So it's not impossible to get chickenpox more than once if your body doesn't mount the normal natural immune response. But that's usually in like people who are immune compromised. So a normal healthy person, it would be pretty rare to get chickenpox more than once. But not impossible. The whole herpes thing, he's kind of right. When we think about herpes on the skin, you can kind of get herpes lesions anywhere, but usually it's not all at the same time. So you're usually not going to get a whole full body breakout of herpes lesions all at the same time. You can get herpes systemically, but usually you'd be really, really sick because then it's like in your blood and nervous system and it's just not good.
Okay.
I wrote down something about the chickenpox vaccine too, or the chickenpox too, because this movie was made in 2007. And I don't know, don't kids get vaccinated for chickenpox now?
They do.
So
yes.
When did children of that age not have gotten chickenpox in this year?
I don't remember when the chickenpox vaccine came out, but it's not that old.
Because I wrote down, are they anti-vaxxers?
Oh.
The fact that their 8-year-old has chickenpox.
Yeah, I hope not. Oh, actually, you're reminding me, Paul Rudd says in the movie when they're having their argument, he's right. He says like, don't give them vaccines. Don't let them eat fish.
So I thought that was like a running joke, is that this family's like anti-vaxxers.
Yeah, maybe.
Who knows?
So for clarity on that, should people get vaccines?
People should get vaccines, just period.
Got it. Noted. I'm going to put an alarm on my phone to remind me of that in a few years when I have a kid. Okay, perfect.
Yeah, all the anti-vaxxers are going to come at me now, so that's fine. They always do.
Relating to getting chickenpox more than once, I've gotten shingles, which I think if you get chickenpox as a child, you can get shingles later on.
True.
Whoa.
True.
Sorry about that. Sorry to hear it, Noelle.
No, it's fine. I know a lot about chickenpox, apparently.
Yeah. No, I've had shingles before, too. I know. It's not fun.
Yeah. Get your chickenpox vaccine.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, please. Okay, so also early on in the movie, it says 8 weeks into her pregnancy, Allison is interviewing James Franco and has to throw up, and this makes her realize she might be pregnant. So is that an accurate depiction of around that time you would start experiencing those types of symptoms?
Yeah, it's fairly accurate. And, you know, women can start feeling symptoms of nausea and vomiting fairly early on, and it varies for everyone. But average probably is somewhere around 7 to 9 weeks. So that's pretty accurate. I also found that it was pretty accurate when she said, when Bill Hader asked her if, you know, is it something you ate? And she says, no, I haven't eaten all day. And that's accurate, too, because an empty stomach actually aggravates nausea and vomiting of pregnancy. So it all kind of fits.
So you got to eat your breakfast.
Yes. Put a little something in your stomach. Don't have an empty stomach when you're pregnant.
Okay.
If you find out you're pregnant at 8 weeks, like what if you're drinking beforehand because you don't know? I was really concerned like that she's going out and clubbing.
You know what? 50% of all pregnancies are unplanned. So 50% of the population that's kind of born, people didn't know right away and are going on and living their normal lives. So it's a concern. No, you should not necessarily drink alcohol, but normal people get pregnant and don't realize they're pregnant right away. So it's a common occurrence.
Man, that's way higher than I thought the percentage yep. would be. Like if you told me 50% of pregnancies were unplanned in the 60s, I'd be like, well, yeah, sure. That makes sense. And is the nausea going on throughout the entire pregnancy or just the 7 to 9 week area?
So most nausea, vomiting, and pregnancy occurs in the first trimester. So is usually resolved by around 14-ish weeks or so. But there are some people who have that persist throughout second trimester, and some do have it throughout all pregnancy. Most not. Most are in the first trimester. But it's not impossible to have it linger longer.
Does everyone get sick, or is it just certain people that get sick?
You know what? We don't know why some experience some of those symptoms and some don't, and not everyone does. There's about 10% of women who won't ever feel nauseous during pregnancy, but most will have some degree of nausea.
And is there stuff that they can do to limit the nausea?
There's different symptomatic things that we can do. So there's certain medications that we sometimes give. So, like I said, keep a little something in your stomach. Usually things like crackers and dry carbohydrates help a lot. There's things like ginger and lozenges and candies that you can suck on that can help. But so there's all sorts of different little tricks that you can do.
Cool. Okay. What about the tests? They go immediately and buy like a bunch of like bags and bags of tests with different brands. Is that necessary? I mean, do you want to like double check with two tests or three, or is one fine?
One is fine. Pregnancy over the counter urine pregnancy tests are pretty darn accurate, but there is a reason why they come in packages of two. So it's never a bad idea to have a backup and to take a backup if you're worried about it. But yeah.
Noelle, you want to ask that question? I think that's good.
I'm in the age group where like a lot of my friends are trying to get pregnant. It's weird. All of a sudden for, you know, the past 15 years, we've been actively trying not to. And now everyone's like, let's get pregnant. it's a weird dynamic shift. And I have a lot of friends that aren't able to, and they will have sex like 17 times in a day.
Impressive.
Or like a day period just to try to get pregnant. And they're still like, no one's getting pregnant. And I guess my question is just like, how easy is it to get pregnant? Because we're told like, oh, you don't use protection and you get pregnant, and yet I have friends that are like tracking ovulation and they're not getting pregnant.
Yep. I think you are exactly right that it's such a weird feeling when you've worked so hard your entire life to not get pregnant, to all of a sudden like throw caution to the wind and be like, yep, we're doing this now. Like it's a very weird feeling. But getting pregnant is not always the easiest thing. As human beings, we're not super efficient at actually achieving that goal. And you only ovulate, if you're normal, you ovulate once a month. So there's literally a really just a couple of day window when you're actually capable of getting pregnant. And that's if you're normally ovulating. And even with that, again, humans are not very efficient at reproduction. And so it's not as easy as
it just seems like they got pregnant once, like so easily. And I it just seems.
Yeah. And definitely don't have sex 17 times a day. That's probably not good for it either. But yeah, once a day, every other day around the time of ovulation is usually the recommendation. And tracking cycles is important to track normal ovulation. And if your cycle is not regular, then that's a reason to see a doctor right away to figure out what needs to be done. But no, we're not good at reproducing. And so it's not as easy as it sometimes seems with all these accidental pregnancies. Plus with each subsequent pregnancy, we get older, and getting older does not work in our favor.
Oh gosh. wait, when you have an accidental pregnancy, is it more likely to be a boy or girl because of when you get pregnant? Because I've heard like wives' tales, like if you get pregnant early, it's a girl and late.
There are so many old wives' tales, and none of them are actually true or have been proven to be true. So sex and gender is solely determined by the man's sperm and if their sperm is carrying an X or a Y.
Wow. And speaking of old wives' tales, I believe Jason Segel's character says, quote, "You got to know the tricks. If a woman is on top, she can't get pregnant. What goes up must come down."
That is it's a very common, misconception. I hear this all the time. And that one's false, that you can most definitely get pregnant when the woman is on top. Sperm do not care about gravity. They can swim upstream just fine.
Got it. That's what
about they smoke so much weed. And I remember back in like the 2000s when we're like Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston can't get pregnant because they smoke so much weed. And that was like all the headlines.
It's a good headline.
Yeah. All the headlines in like 2004. Is that true? Like, would this guy have a less chance of getting pregnant because he smoked too much?
There is some truth to that. There is getting to be more and more research done on marijuana use during fertile periods and during pregnancy and what its effects are. Some of the data is a little bit mixed, but in general, it is thought that marijuana lowers sperm counts. So far, it hasn't been shown to actually decrease live birth rates, but we do know that it affects sperm motility, sperm concentration. We also think that it affects female fertility a little bit too. So there is some truth to all that.
Right. That makes sense. Okay. So Ben says, Seth Rogen's character, that he gets like all flustered and upset when she first tells him that she's pregnant. And one of the things he was saying was, "I assume you're wearing a patch or a dental dam." And she's like, "What the hell are you talking about?" So what the hell is he talking about?
The patch, there is a birth control patch that is like a birth control pill. It has the same hormones in it. It works the same way, except for it's a clear patch that you put on your skin, and estrogen and progesterone is absorbed through the skin, and it works to prevent ovulation. So a birth control patch, like he's discussing, would be something that could prevent pregnancy. A dental dam, on the other hand, not so much.
Right.
That is not contraception.
I remember in middle school, during sex ed, we all had to like play Jeopardy about sex, about like STDs. And my team name was the Dental Damsels in Distress. Just want to say I've been writing jokes since high school.
That's pretty good for a middle schooler.
Yeah. Also, any middle school that involves Jeopardy, I want my kids to attend. That sounds
exactly
awesome.
Jeopardy about STDs. Like, there was pictures involved.
It's a great way to make it less awkward.
Yeah. Everyone wants to win. Like, yes, I got herpes.
Yeah. What are crabs? Yeah. Okay. Jason Segel's character at one point in this wonderful line where he like greets the couple as they come in, and he tells her like, "Oh, your body's responding really well to the pregnancy. It's amazing how fast the milk arrives. Well, I'm going to go make a protein shake," which I don't know. That line just gets me. But does the milk arrive amazingly fast?
No, it does not. But what they're probably joking and referring to is that very early on in pregnancy, with the increase in hormones and estrogen and progesterone, your breasts and breast tissue do respond to that. So all the glandular tissue and duct tissue is kind of growing and expanding. So breasts enlarge and become tender and bigger pretty darn quickly early on in pregnancy. Mm. But no, that's them just prepping for the milk to come in. Most of the time, milk doesn't come in until after delivery, occasionally you can get some symptoms of lactation during pregnancy, but it's usually later on.
Wow.
Well, you said so her, it all starts to show, like, she's at work at one point and she's like, I'm not going to tell them. And my question was about, like, when do you start to show? And as you know, when do you have to tell your job that you're pregnant? Or, like, is it just legally you never have to tell them until, like, the day before it's born? I was interested about that.
Yeah, I think everyone is totally different of when they start to show versus not show. It depends on your body type and your torso length and how you carry. People with shorter torsos are going to show sooner because there's just not room for that uterus to grow. That has to grow out. And early on in pregnancy, like if people are saying like, oh, I started showing at 6 weeks. Well, they didn't because your uterus isn't over your pubic bone at the time of 6 weeks.
Burn.
Yes. So sorry to burst that bubble. Your uterus, your baby's not showing, but you are having a whole lot more water retention and bloating. So you are showing signs of pregnancy by kind of, you know, having those body changes, but it's not your uterus that early on. But in terms of when the baby and the uterus actually do start to become invisible, it's very different for everyone.
Okay. That makes sense.
And no, you don't have to tell your job because, yeah, you legally don't have to tell them anything.
Great. Yeah, I was wondering that, like, obviously at some point you're going to be like, I'm 8 months pregnant. I'm obviously pregnant. But then I was like, maybe you don't have to, or different states have different laws. I don't know.
Yeah, I have two boys. In my second pregnancy, I didn't tell my job until I was 25 weeks. And finally, at 25 weeks, my labor and delivery nurses looked over at me and said, Dr. Tanaway, we don't want to ask, but are you pregnant? we know we're not supposed to ask that sort of thing. And I was like, yeah, I'm pregnant. I knew you guys would figure it out eventually. And they asked me how pregnant I was, and they were just blown away that I was already 25 weeks and hadn't told anyone. And it's just totally up to you when you want to tell people, when you don't want to tell people, especially your job.
Aren't you not supposed to tell people before 3 months? Is that?
I mean, it's just, that's totally personal. It's just a personal preference, because when you're early on, miscarriage risk is really high. It's like 20 to 25% of all pregnancies miscarry. And so it's just a matter of, well, if I'm this early on and there's a chance that I could miscarry, am I comfortable telling all these people? And then if the worst happens, you know, God forbid the worst happens, do I want the support of knowing, of telling these people so they can support me, or is that going to make me feel worse? And so that's where it becomes a personal decision of how early you tell people.
Also, one of her coworkers at E is doing her wardrobe when she notices that she's showing, and she says, quote, your boobs are going to be scary big, and then they'll go down and they'll stay down.
Truth.
Okay, truth. That's what I wanted to, that's what I was asking.
I don't have any other elaboration on that. That as a mom, and that's just very okay. Accurate.
Asked and answered. Well, there's a point Ben, Seth Rogen's character, is flipping through a pregnancy book, and he says that it's like just a list of things that, you know, you can't do when you're pregnant. He says you can't eat sushi, you can't smoke, you can't jump on trampolines. So can you do those three things, or do you recommend not doing those three things?
I would say he is factual in this, and those are things that we recommend you don't do in pregnancy. Sushi, because it's not cooked, it's raw, and anything that you eat that's raw could potentially be contaminated with bacteria, and specifically we think about things like something called listeria. So that's the rationale behind avoiding sushi, is that it's not cooked, so you could be ingesting something not good that could be harmful to the pregnancy. No, you shouldn't smoke. We all know that. No, you shouldn't do drugs. We all know that. A trampoline, we tell pregnant women to avoid physical activity that could result in a fall or trauma to your belly. So any sort of high impact sports or activities like a trampoline should be avoided for that reason, to avoid any trauma to the belly or falls.
That makes sense.
But if you're already, like, let's say you're already a skier, could you still ski just like blue, you know, green circles and blue squares? Or do you just say, like, cut it out for the 9 months?
You know what? I get asked this question quite a bit, and I'm a skier myself, so I sympathize. technically, I don't think there's any OBGYN out there with that would give the go-ahead for skiing. Because there's, even if you're a great skier, even on the greens, there's always potential for falls, and there's always potential for someone else taking you out. And yes, it's lower risk when you're earlier on, but I don't think any doctor is ever going to be like, oh yeah, you'll be fine. Yeah. We're all going to kind of say officially the answer is no to that one.
What about like running? Let's say I'm an avid runner. I run marathons.
Yeah.
Could you still go running?
Yes. So whatever, just like normal exercise you do, if your body is used to doing that exercise, if you're a marathon runner, you are perfectly fine to continue your normal exercise routine throughout pregnancy. We're just avoiding the high impact, like the trauma, the potential for trauma. So if you are a bike rider, maybe your Peloton is fine in the house. But outside, if there's a risk of falling off that bike, you might want to avoid that. I used to have, you know, athletes in my practice, softball players, volleyball players. Those sports are okay to play, but you're not going to be diving for the volleyball and you're not going to be sliding into the bases. So you got to modify things a little bit to decrease risk of trauma.
So Noelle, next time you're pregnant and you're running a marathon and somebody's on the sidelines and they look really cool and they invite you to have some sushi and jump on their trampoline, you decline.
Be like, I'm good running my marathon.
I'm busy.
Honestly, the worst part about the potential of getting pregnant is not eating sushi or drinking alcohol. Like,
I know, isn't it hard?
Those two things are maybe two of my greatest pleasures in life.
I'm with you.
And morning coffee, because you can't have caffeine either, right?
You can have some caffeine. The current recommendation is up to 200 milligrams a day is considered safe. So that's one really strong cup of coffee. If you're making weak coffee, maybe a cup and a half too. But 200 milligrams of caffeine a day is considered safe.
There you go. Can have a little coffee.
Got it.
Yeah, so a little bit's good.
Ethan, I have a question, and I think it's a little bit back in the movie, but I'm just like, I'm just so interested in this. About the little girl who has her eighth birthday, they ask her like, oh, do you know where babies come from? She, like, gives this like elaborate response about like aliens. And this kid is almost eight. And I feel like children at that age should have a pretty good understanding of where babies come from. But maybe I'm being judgmental of this 8-year-old.
I thought that scene is hilarious. I remember years and years ago, I think I was younger, we asked like one of my friend's little sisters, I think she might have been younger than that, like 6 or 7, like what she thought sex was. And she started giggling and said, it's when a guy and a girl take their bottoms off and they show their butts to each other. And we just died. And so kids' understandings of sex and babies can be quite hilarious. And definitely I am a gynecologist and a sex educator. So I always encourage, you know, sharing factual information if kids ask, and sharing anatomical names and appropriate terminology and being very blunt. And kids like blunt information because they don't have any value on sex yet. And so if you're just totally straight out factual with them, they'll be like, oh, all right, sounds good. And they'll go on with their day. But yeah, facts are good with kids, even young kids.
My mom's a pediatric nurse practitioner. So like we got like the book that had like naked cartoon characters as like a very, like it's just these like round cartoon characters that are like, this is a vagina. This is a penis. The penis is inserted into the vagina. And I just knew that so young. So I was surprised when I saw, and again, like you said, like at 6, I didn't think it was bad. I was just like, yeah, that's what happens.
Right. Let's exactly. And teaching that sort of stuff early on does take a lot of the mystery out of it. So it normalizes things a lot at a much younger age. So kids actually come out with a much healthier view of sex and bodies when you start young.
Yeah. And then like you turn like 9 or 10, you know what kissing is. And you're like, that's gross.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. I'm never going to kiss a girl so weird.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The break is over. Here we go back to the show about science.
So I wanted to ask, there's a point during sex, speaking of sex, which, by the way, your friend's daughter is not completely wrong. I mean, it is showing your butts to each other.
Yeah, you do. You show off your butts to each other a little bit.
She, you know, didn't understand the bulk of it, but that, anyways. So Ben is like super worried while they're having sex that he's going to, quote, poke the baby's face with his penis, which, I mean, sounds absurd when I just say it, but like during the scene, you could see how somebody would get, you know, anxious or paranoid about that. So yeah, I just wanted to kind of set the record straight here.
I think this is a super common fear that a lot of people with penises have, and you're not going to poke the baby. It's not going to happen. Sex is a very healthy thing to do during pregnancy, unless obviously your doctor tells you no for some other health reason, but you're not going to poke the baby.
So you're fine. Not 17 times a day, but a normal amount is fine.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And Paul Rudd says you're supposed to spend 3 months' pay on a ring. Now, it's hard to ask if that's accurate, but it's like, is that, I don't know. I mean, rings, I feel like when I, and this is just for anything, this isn't even just rings, it's for watches or, you know, I was in a clothing store the other day just because I thought it looked insane where, you know, there's a shirt for like $850 and I'm like, that's a shirt, man. Like shirts are like 25, I mean 30, I'm paying $30 for a shirt. That's a nice shirt. So I don't know, how do you ladies feel about the ring? Like, is the ring something that should be really expensive and, you know, a diamond? And is that stuff still important in the modern age?
That's a heavy question.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'll go first. I got engaged actually a couple months ago.
Congratulations.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Yeah. So I have now asked how much the ring was. I don't care how much the ring was. All I know is, like, at one point a long time ago, I told him exactly what I wanted. And then we never talked about it since. And out pops exactly what I described. And I was really, really happy. And it's beautiful. And I love it. So if he was like, hey, it's cubic zirconium, I'd be like, that's great. I still love it. And if he was like, I spent 3 months, I'd be like, that's a lot to spend on something, but I still love it. You know, I feel like the price doesn't matter, but I don't know. I wouldn't be offended if he spent like $100 on
it. Well, first of all, I love your strategy here of just telling him exactly what you want. That's incredibly helpful for everybody listening. That's the way to go.
It was early enough too, where like, it wasn't like, it didn't feel pushy at all. I was just like, hey, just, you know, my dream ring is a solid, like one diamond with a silver or white gold band. And that's it. I'm not like, I'm not a ring person. I just want like a really nice, sparkly one diamond ring.
Makes it so easy. So, it's just like, oh, okay, I'll just go buy that. Yeah.
Nice and simple. Yeah. That's great. Yes. I think my husband and I, we went ring shopping together exactly once and we fought the entire time and we never spoke about it again. And then we got engaged maybe like 5 months later.
What were you fighting about the entire time?
I think we just had like totally different ideas and tastes. Like although this is a ring that I'm wearing, my husband is very particular about his style and what he likes. And our styles are a little different. And so what he envisioned buying for me was very different than what I envisioned wearing. And we fought in the store and the whole way home and never spoke about it again until he actually proposed. And he did really well. I will say that he did very, very well despite the animosity.
Wow. Hats off to him. Well
yes,
done.
Yes, he did great.
It took 4 months to recover, but he did it.
Exactly. It took months and months of recovery and contemplation. But
do I really want this?
But yes. No, and our anniversary is this weekend, so we're good.
Oh, all right. Well, happy anniversary. Happy anniversary to you.
Yeah, I don't know about the money. It's more just like that thought, like the fact that like someone loves you enough to put in the thought to buy a ring is really nice.
Yeah, and I'm sentimental too. So I would never do like some people like to upgrade or change it out. I would never.
That sounds weird.
Same. This is forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I was even staining. We've been doing a lot of house projects and I was staining and he was like, take off your ring. And I was like, I can't. He was like, please take off.
No, I will never do that or the spell will be broken.
I can't. I'm sorry. So now I wear work gloves.
Okay. At one point, they're having a huge argument. I hope not similar to the one that you had with your husband, where Ben says, I know this isn't you talking, it's your hormones. And then proceeds to say, fuck you, hormones. And you're a bitch, hormones. So, yeah, is that another, like, nausea type side effect where, you know, at certain points in the pregnancy your hormones are kind of going to just get out of whack?
I mean, your hormones are just high throughout the whole pregnancy. So even from the very beginning, your estrogen and progesterone is just rising, rising, rising. And it kind of flattens out after a while, but they're still so much higher than what you're ever used to. So he's kind of right in that just hormones are a fucking bitch during pregnancy. I mean, it's tough. Wow. And
isn't it comparable to when you have your period? Like, because I didn't realize this before quarantine, but now I spend a lot of time with myself without much else going on. And I realized like the day before I start my period, I'm a horrible human being. And like anything makes me cry. And I guess maybe I was distracted before, like working, where now I'm very aware that I just cry at literally. So I'm wondering, does that transfer to like, if I was to get pregnant, I will just be that for 9 months?
Not necessarily, because your actual period when you're bleeding, your hormones are actually the opposite. They're the lowest that they ever are during your entire cycle. So they're much lower than during pregnancy. But all of that hormonal shift is probably what gives us some of those PMS and emotional sorts of symptoms. It's the dropping of your hormones that's triggering a lot of that. Whereas it's a little bit of the opposite in pregnancy. In pregnancy, your just hormones are just sky high the whole time.
So Noelle is just going to be full of bliss and high-fiving everybody for nine months?
She might be. Yeah. Great.
Okay.
That sounds really great. Yeah, it's the opposite of just like crying because I like dropped something.
although I do think a lot of pregnant people just kind of like start crying. I mean, that's par for the course when you're pregnant, is everything's just going to make you cry.
I cry all the time anyway. Just like I'll watch a commercial, I'll cry. I'll like see something sweet. I cry at everything happy, everything sad. So
I remember when my first pregnancy, when I was pregnant, it was during like an Olympic season. And then all of those Olympic commercials that are like Johnson & Johnson, thank you, mom. I was like a bawling huge mess during every commercial break because of all of those.
Same, and I wasn't pregnant.
Yeah.
Whenever
you're in for it.
I think it's another, it would have to be a different podcast episode, but I need to get to the bottom of why I'm like that also, because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that it's a basketball commercial about Nike shoes and, you know, a basketball player is talking about the town where he comes from, and for some reason I'm teary-eyed. That shouldn't happen.
Same.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that's all about. Okay, so man, I'm trying to pick what to ask you about, because I know we're running short on time, but I heard a few facts/myths. I'm not sure what's what here because they sound a little bit wild. One of them, speaking of, you know, me having side effects as the person who's not going to be pregnant, is this Quavade syndrome or sympathetic pregnancy. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, but I had no idea about this before this morning, where apparently the man can, like, just by being near, they can experience effects.
Yeah, I think that this has been reported and it's been talked about, and some men will say that they have experienced kind of these sympathy pains or sympathy symptoms. It's not an official like medical syndrome by any means, but there is some truth to that. I think, you know, whenever you get close to someone, a lot of people can have sympathy pains for a lot of things. And pregnancy is definitely a high emotional, high stress sort of time that can provoke a lot of those same symptoms and side effects. And so it does happen and it is reported.
Wow.
But as far as like a real medical syndrome, I don't know.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense.
I have a question about, she had said at some point, like, she's like, I didn't want this. I didn't want a baby for 10 years. And at this point, I don't know how old her character is supposed to be. I know his is supposed to be 23. He agrees. But I was just wondering, you know, you kind of touched, you quickly mentioned it earlier, but does fertility go down as you get older? And is it true, like after 35, it's really hard to get pregnant?
Yes, fertility declines. It's always declining. So it's not just like after 35, but once you get into your 30s and once you hit 35, it's a more exponential decline. And so it's not just like some magic thing happens at 35 where it all of a sudden plummets. Every single year as you're getting older, your fertility is declining slowly. And it's not that it's hard or impossible to get pregnant after 35, because obviously lots of people get pregnant easily and naturally and on their own at 35, but your fertility in general is declining. So it's still possible to get pregnant. It's still out there, but it does, your chances do decrease.
Wow.
Sorry, that was a bummer.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you have no idea how dark things have got on this podcast. Last week, we talked about Children of Men, a lot of pandemic stuff. Anyways, can you get pink eye from farting on a pillow?
This is funny because I joke about this a lot after seeing this movie like a million years ago. But no, technically, you can't get pink eye from farting on a pillow because farts shouldn't have bacteria in them.
Wow.
But I mean, if it's a wet fart, then
oh,
I mean, poop, yeah, has bacteria and can cause a bacterial conjunctivitis. So just don't poop on the pillow and you should be fine.
Okay. You hear that, pranksters? Don't
poop on
your
pillow.
Friend's pillows. I can't believe we have to tell you that, but it's important. Okay. So the last one, because I do think this is probably important for a lot of people that either are pregnant or going to be, they show in the movie that she has like her designated doctor and she has a relationship with her doctor. And then of course, when it's time for the baby to come, he's not around. He's actually at a bar mitzvah in San Francisco for 3 days. So yeah, I mean, is this a common occurrence? I mean, you know, are people like, I don't know, freaking out because their doctors aren't available? And how do you avoid something like that?
Yeah, I think it's less common just because the face of medicine and the practice of medicine has changed and evolved so dramatically over the years. There no longer is the solo practitioners and the solo obstetricians who are just delivering all of their own patients. Certainly, we all do like to deliver our own patients, but most of us will work in some sort of group with some sort of call system. So you have a number of partners that all kind of want to see and know all of the patients because we are on a call schedule and I might not be on call the night that someone comes in to deliver. If I'm available, maybe I can come in and deliver my own patient. But if I'm not on call, I just might not be available. But my partner will be because there is always going to be someone on schedule and on call and ready to be there. So you will never be left hanging.
There's a little team. You get to meet a little team.
Right. There's a lot of, and practices are all set up very differently.
So she's in that bathtub and she like looks really relaxed. Can she just stay home and give birth at home instead of like go to the hospital? That looks nice.
Oh my God. Don't ask me this question. You know what? Watching that scene, a bathtub is a really great way to relieve labor pain and to, you know, kind of get you through labor and transition. So being submerged in warm water is a really great pain reliever. So that is very much accurate. As OBGYNs, we generally don't support home birth because there is some evidence that it is not as safe for mom and baby. And in fact, babies have a 2 to 3 times increased risk of severe morbidity or mortality. So we don't like that idea. It really scares the crap out of us because we know all the bad stuff that can happen in a split second during labor. So no, I would not recommend delivering at home. Home birthers, please don't come at me.
No, come at her.
But yes, being in a warm bath is wonderful during labor.
Yeah, and piggybacking off of that, she's like, I don't want drugs. And I personally have seen the documentary, The Business of Being Born, which was produced by Ricky Lake. And it's all about like natural childbirth.
Mm-hmm.
Do you... You're like, oh gosh, she lives in LA, she's one of those. Like in my mind, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to have a natural childbirth at a hospital, but like in a tub. Is that like the idea of not wanting drugs? Is that like a good thing or a bad thing? Or does it not matter? Is it personal choice?
Totally personal preference. Totally personal preference and the value that you put on that yourself. 90% of women will get epidurals these days. So they're super common. They're super safe. And it's a very fine choice to do. Just like that, you know, 10% of women are choosing natural births, or some women don't choose natural birth. It just happens, and that's fine. And it's totally up to your decision and your choice. And any OBGYN would be happy to support either choice. I mean, that is totally up to you. And we don't care either way if a patient picks an epidural or not. We'll be supportive, and both of them are great. So
awesome.
Up to you.
Speaking of your choice, I presume that we're all pro-choice and praying that this Supreme Court justice doesn't get confirmed.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, backing off that, so I know that like late-term abortions aren't really a thing that people do. I mean,
correct.
They do them, but like a lot of sometimes those late term abortions are because of medical reasons for both either the child or the mother. And is there like a time that like a late term abortion kind of happens because of genetic testing? Like, does that happen at like 5 months along or something?
This is such a, it's such a touchy and loaded topic and very, very good questions. So thank you. Late-term abortion as a term is a total buzzword. It's a political buzzword. It's not a medical term. It's not an actual thing, and it doesn't mean anything medically when we hear that word.
Wow.
But what they're referring to is just is this idea of abortion later on in pregnancy when a baby may or may not be close to viability. In terms of genetic testing, there is something we do at around 18 to 20 weeks called an anatomy ultrasound, which is really looking at a detailed anatomy of the baby. And that's the ultrasound that can often pick up really severe anomalies that can be life-threatening or lethal to babies. And so if we're going to pick up something really bad, it's usually right around that gestation. And so that's why like choice is so important and these laws limiting abortion are so important, because if a woman is 20 weeks getting this this devastating diagnosis, and to do follow-up testing and genetic testing and more invasive stuff might take a couple weeks to kind of figure out and cover all of our bases, she might be getting, you know, a couple weeks further into pregnancy. And then depending on which state she's in, her options may become more and more limited. And that's where all of these things could become very, very problematic, is there's so many situations in obstetrics that cannot be legislated because there's so much nuance in these diagnoses in each particular situation that they're really tying our hands to practice substandard medicine.
Jesus.
Sorry, that was really heavy.
No, no, that's great. I was just thinking how it sounds like so strangely what you're saying is that the politicians should just listen to scientists more and not religious figures.
Yeah, they should kind of just stay out of my exam room.
Yeah, yeah, I really think that they should too. You seem to know what you're talking about and they seem to be full of garbage. Anyways, I'm unfortunately have to wrap things up. We're out of time, but I would love to have both of you back to discuss some other sort of pregnancy film because I feel like we're leaving so much on the table. Noelle and I are filled with questions.
There's still so much, like we just got to like, she hasn't even delivered this. I have all these questions about what happens, how do you get back in shape? There's just so many questions. What books do I read? What do you recommend? You know, breastfeeding, just everything. This is great. This has been really fun.
This has super been really fun.
Super informative. Maybe until next time, Dr. Stacy, is there a place that you would recommend people go or a specific book, like something you would suggest that, you know, people check out if they want to become more informed?
Sure. So I trained at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, and Mayo Clinic has a wonderful book on pregnancy that my mentors and everyone that trained me wrote. So Mayo Clinic's Guide to Pregnancy is the one that I would recommend.
Fantastic. And you have a bit of an online presence as well. Where can people find you?
A little bit. On all my social media, on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, I am Dr. Stacy T. So it's STACI. And yeah, you can find me there.
Awesome. You're getting the info out there for the people.
That's right.
It's unbelievable. And Noelle Lara, where can people find you? See what's going on. Laugh at your jokes.
Yeah, I don't have that much. I'm starting to slowly back away from socials, but I have Instagram. It's at Noelle Lara, N-O-E-L-L-E-L-A-R-A. You can see me on, I write on the show Archibald's Next Big Thing, which is on Netflix. And I host the show Science Works, which is on Amazon Prime. It's a kid's show where I talk to different people in science jobs, science, technology, engineering, mathematics. It's really fun. And then my online presence, A Little Advice, which is a show where I ask kids for advice on my life. It's on Instagram and on YouTube.
Amazing. Okay, great.
Oh, all of that sounds awesome.
Yeah, I hope everyone checks it out. And yeah, thank you both once again. This was absolutely delightful. And I hope we do, you know, Look Who's Talking Now 2 or something.
Oh, yeah, I'm in.
Yes, okay, definitely.
Great.
Thank you so much, Ethan.
Thanks, Ethan.
Absolutely. Bye-bye. Bad Science is a Seeker podcast produced by Emily Feld and me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our editor is Lucas Bollinger, and our social media is managed by Blue Whale Media. Shout out to EJ and Kate.
And the executive schmoducer is Brett Kushner.
Oh, follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Pod. If there's a movie you'd like us to discuss on the podcast, feel free to email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. And please leave us an iTunes review. Give us 5 stars. I sound like an Uber driver, but it does help. It makes sure people know about the podcast, which we really appreciate. Thanks for listening. Bye.